Welcome to the Ayahuasca Parents Podcast.
Hey.
Well, hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
It's been a while.
Yep. After spending 10 days in the jungle, and then I don't even know how much time has gone by because it feels like every day has been a year since I've been home.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just like crazy town between pandemic, and we live in Utah. And what was it? Was it just Wednesday? So just 2 days ago?
Feels like a year ago, but it was 2 days ago.
Yeah. We also woke up to a 5.7 earthquake, which was just hilarious since the last earthquake was in 1992.
Sort of.
But it was in southern Utah, so yeah. We didn't feel it. So yeah. for some of us, like you and me, this was our first earthquake.
In my life.
Right. And I grew up a little bit in Minnesota, so my brain panicked and I couldn't remember in the moment what to do for a tornado versus an earthquake.
I think a lot of people
yeah.
stared at the walls and ceilings. Yeah.
It took me a minute to realize we were in an earthquake.
Yeah.
Like your brain gets really confused and you know, you're nauseous and dizzy and you can actually feel earthquakes before they come. I've learned so much about earthquakes and talk about being connected to the earth. Like, yeah.
Well, and the best way to practice for what to do with an earthquake is observe the 90 aftershocks.
Right.
And at some point you'll get it right.
Yeah. So there were quite a few aftershocks after the fact.
Two giant ones, understandably. I would say. I mean, if you're in California, you're like 5.7, that's nothing.
Yeah. But for those of us that, you know, we don't have earthquakes. We just don't.
No, I felt that was scary.
Yeah, it was definitely very nerve wracking on top of trying to prepare for a pandemic. our state that's already done the pandemic shopping, then went into
earthquake shopping.
And then there was weird rumors going on. So we have the Wasatch Fault. And of course, like all the other faults, you know, for decades now, they've been like, the big one's coming.
Yeah.
So someone started a rumor locally that a 9.0 earthquake was going to hit.
Mm-hmm.
So we had neighbors that were packing up cars and getting their 72-hour kits ready. And
stocking up on gasoline.
Right. And that was the other rumor. The other rumor was that the refineries were going to shut down, that they were going to put everybody in that we were going to be quarantined to our homes for 30 days and that to make sure that people didn't leave, that they were going to shut down the gas stations.
What a weird time to be alive right now.
I mean, like my mind is blown every day is another, there's something else.
Yeah.
Right. So how are you holding up?
Well, so I know you say you were gone for 10 days, but I felt like it was a month and, you know, with two little kids, that's a lot. So I totally see what you do. So I miss you.
I know. That was so sweet to hear. Like, I think at one point you texted me as we were headed back from Peru and you're like, do you have any idea how much you do in the house? I'm thinking, yeah.
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 I mean, for the guy that cooks once or twice a week and makes breakfasts and lunches for the kids once or twice a week at most. Yeah. I mean, it was like, holy shit. Like, I was staring at the clock. Oh, I can't wait till school starts, you know, just to have like a minute. But then I'd have to come home and clean the house. And you were right. There were times you were complaining. You're like, you guys have no idea how much I'm wiping up messes in the kitchen. And I was like, you're crazy. We're not that dirty. Well, we're not that dirty because you're wiping up all the messes in the kitchen.
I'm constantly wiping, putting things away, sweeping.
The kids are dirty.
Picking up. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Just the kids. It's just the kids.
The kids are dirty. Yeah. No, the kids are dirty. Like, they put honey on a knife and it gets everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's just the way that it is. People get things out, then they don't put them away. And so I'm constantly going behind everybody putting things away because I've learned that it's just better for my own sanity just to do it than to scream at people and have people come back to put it away. I mean, sometimes I do. And sometimes I'm just like, it's just easier for me just to clean it up or, you know, put it away. And then I try and remind everybody after the fact, hey,
nicely.
Let's do such and such, or let's be mindful of this. And of course, you know, then, you know, everyone's rolling their eyeballs like, I do that, Mom.
It's like, the hell you do? There's only three of us in this house right now and I'm the clean one.
I know.
So there's nobody else to blame. Anyway.
I know.
So you go to Peru for a year and then you come back and you were in Peru with a bunch of Asians and Europeans and brought back the coronavirus to our house or something that was very similar.
Well, no, what happened was, is that I was at the Temple of the Way of Light with 23 other beautiful, brilliant women.
Mm.
And it was an incredible experience. We'll get into that in just a minute. But I mean, they're from all over the world. So when I got home, and it took us, you know, a little bit longer to get
home.
By
the way, I meant no
I know you
harm
did. I
to
know.
Asians and Europeans.
Yeah, I know. Really,
supposedly that's where this came from. But who knows? The news are liars.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Everybody's a liar.
It doesn't really matter. It's here. So now it's just a matter of just what we're going to do with it, I think.
Exactly.
And I think that's what most people that have any sort of intelligence is focusing on.
Yeah. And well, so you came home sick and I immediately thought
it was just
letdown.
I came home. I came home and then I got sick like 2 days later. And I've been sick almost with a low grade cold almost, you know,
3 weeks.
For 3 weeks. And this is bizarre for me because there is not a virus or a bacterial infection that I have met that I have not been able to kick its ass.
Yeah.
So I mean, like,
we'll have to tell people what you do to keep our immunities high. Cause I think, you know, some people might find that interesting. Like we just, I mean, we're consuming so much vitamin C.
Intuitively, this is how I feel, is that the word inoculation just keeps on coming up for me. And I was like, that's crazy. Like, how do you get, you know, how is a cold supposed to help prevent you from getting like a virus or something? And then I had, and then somebody on Facebook today, they were talking about this case study that was done in 1990 with certain strands of the coronavirus. And anyways, how it looks like that catching a cold actually could help you prevent getting the virus itself. And it just kind of felt, I felt vindicated. I was like, okay, well, I guess my intuition is on point there. But well,
thank you, universe, because I caught whatever you had.
Right. Yep. And it's it's been lingering for you. It's like, it's kind of a little weight sitting in our chest. Yeah. Although I have to say today, I feel so much better.
The first day I felt really, really good. I was going to get my fascia work done, which, by the way, it seems like a lot of people are interested in fascia. So thank you for downloading that episode. On my way to get fascia, that's when the earth decided to shake.
To move on Wednesday?
Violently shake. So.
Well, it was definitely a surprising shake.
This has been a weird reality. Like, I'll let it go. But it's been it wasn't a little shake. All our pictures falling off the walls, glasses broken everywhere, 9-year-olds waking up, things are falling off her walls under her. She's screaming bloody murder. I know. You know,
the dog was jumping up like 5 feet in
the dog's like, get me the hell out of the house. I'd rather be on the ground where I can tell when this thing's coming.
It's been several days and he doesn't want to have anything to do with inside the house right now.
Like, shut up with your stupid shack. Yeah, I need to touch the ground.
He keeps on looking at us like, you guys are crazy to be inside that, that stick built thing you call a house.
Yeah. Get out of there.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's been a whirlwind here in Utah. When I first got home, things were just sort of business as usual, you know, then I have friends in Vietnam. I have a friend in China, and then I have family that lives in Singapore. And then I have family that lives on the West Coast in kind of the Washington, Oregon border. And so we've been keeping an eye on everything that's been going on in Asia and then also kind of West Coast USA, because we've noticed that Utah is sort of a week behind. We're following about a week behind. So some shocking things to learn was that Asia's actually been dealing with this since the beginning of December, really late November, beginning of December. And things were really, really like the height of the virus for them was mid-December. And my friend in Vietnam corroborated this. He's like, a lot of us in Asia were trying to wave our hands at, you know, the USA going, why aren't you guys preparing for this? Why haven't you shut down travel? Why don't you have better precautions in place?
Yeah.
So it's just, it's been, you know, crazy as far as that's concerned. And now, you know, China is saying 5 months later, keep in mind, we don't have any new cases. And so the way I'm looking at things is, okay, well, it took them 5 months. You know, we didn't even shut down until beginning of March, let the 5 months begin.
I think Trump started shutting down travel to Asia in January. I'm getting criticized for that. But I mean, I think it really started to shut down in March.
Well, it was in, yeah, it was in March because somehow I was able to leave the country, go to South America and come back.
Yeah.
And when we were going through immigrations and customs, there were no precautions in place. It was business as usual.
And it's miserable now if you're in customs.
Yeah. Or immigration. Yeah. Immigration's got to be
immigration.
pretty big. But anyway, so it's been absolutely a whirlwind, not to mention, you know, I've just come back from working with ayahuasca and now I've, you know, people keep on asking me from the women from the retreat, you know, how's your integration going? I'm like, I'm still trying to process everything. What I was going to say is that, so I was home for a week and sick. The second week I was sort of monitoring things and realizing that maybe we should take this a little bit more serious than what we had been taking them because of my sister-in-law, my brother in Washington, and what all of a sudden their school districts were going to do. And and so our school district has done a soft close for 14 days. But in Washington, Oregon area, they're closed until like the 24th or the 28th, something like that, of April.
Yeah.
My two cents, my intuition is
well, that they just shut down Illinois right before this podcast. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that. And California.
And New York.
So I have a feeling if you live in some of the interior states like what we do, or we are, you know, be prepared because whatever's happening in the international markets is what I call them.
Yeah.
It's going to happen here.
And trickle so over.
My two cents is next week, which is our second week of, you know, kind of self quarantine, is that they're going to make it official. And I have a police officer friend who reached out a few days ago on Tuesday.
Right before the earthquake.
To let me know that they were talking about some drastic measures and having everybody be in a house quarantine for a little bit of time.
Yeah.
But now we're knowing that now we've seen that it's really going to be 30 days. But the governors, the local governments have been asked specifically, is this going to go on longer than 30 days? And they won't answer the question, which tells me that we're just doing baby steps. First 14, 15 days, then 30 days. Then I don't know what's going to happen.
Hey, real quick, we had one of our listeners in Canada reach out, Lisa. She wanted to see how we were doing. So
just
want to say thanks to Lisa for checking in on us.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. And I have not seen that message, so we'll respond. Yeah. Or did you respond?
I responded to her. Oh. Yeah.
Well, hi, Lisa. Let's see. So then I've had kids home, so that was fun. Oh, yeah. So the day that we were supposed to start online school, that was Wednesday, we woke up to the earthquake and school got shut down.
It's just an apocalypse in Utah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've surrendered.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
What I know
is whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
Right. What I know is I don't know anything. Expect surprises. And I'm going to take
prepared.
It.
Yeah.
I'm taking it day by day.
And water. And we don't have 4,000 packages of toilet paper, but we'll figure that out. So,
yeah. Here's my two cents on everybody, you know, doing the pandemic shopping. It's nice to be prepared. And I think everybody should be prepared, clearly. Mm. But until there's no food in the grocery stores, everybody needs to like relax.
Chill out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like we have enough food and water. If we needed to hunker down for 30 days and never leave our house, we're totally fine. We have family that has, you know, years of supplies if need be. So we're completely fine, but I'm continuing to do my regular grocery shop and meal plan so that I can, you know, still feed us tons of, you know, fresh fruits and veggies. Cause that's what we live on. My goal is that if things take a turn, and I think I'll know, cause I've got great intuition. If I all of a sudden feel like I need to focus on just making a ton of meals and freezing them, then that's what I'll do.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to panic. Strangely, I am not stressed out or scared or afraid.
No.
You know, it feels like, it really feels like, you know, our reality is reflecting back at us what's been happening in the collective consciousness. We've now projected this incredible virus onto each other and onto humanity because of the crazy viruses people have been struggling with, you know, from within.
Yeah.
So maybe having all of these comforts taken away and everybody sitting in their homes and their own energy forced to interface with real people will help, you know, help people come to some conclusions that are,
hurt.
You know, much needed, be more symbiotic with the earth and each other, you know?
Yeah. It's been great to see places that are locked down, you know, like Italy,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden their rivers are cleared up,
mm-hmm.
and China was on lockdown and their smog went away.
Right.
You know, and I think those are good observations that, you know, I hope, I don't know if they're making a big deal about it yet, but they should, because that's the imprint we're leaving daily on the yeah. planet. And, you know, in a lot of these places, they're seeing flocks of birds come back. I mean, that quick.
I mean, gosh, our air, you know? our air here
is better.
Incredibly improved. Yeah. I mean, they're not doing so many flights anymore because there's just not a lot of people yeah. flying.
And, well, there's not as many cars on the yeah, road right now. I think people are remarkable. Staying home, which is good.
Blue sky, fluffy clouds. I'm like, yeah. oh my gosh, this is awesome.
Yeah, I think anybody that can work from home right now is working from home. You know, I've noticed
really should be working from
yeah,
home.
Yeah. I mean, I've noticed, you know, with the work we do, sometimes I have to drive and there's no traffic. None.
Right.
Doesn't even matter what time of day. There's no traffic. So.
Yeah. So, anyway. I mean, it's undetermined. I mean, there's a ..
Yeah.
type scenario happening and everybody has a theory and,
yeah.
you know, you get up on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or. I mean, everybody has an idea.
Everybody has a theory.
Yeah. And we've looked at all of them. We've looked at all yep. of them. And what I decided was I'm going to shut it all down.
yeah.
And I'm going to go within and just pay attention to what I need to focus on.
Well, every theory goes from the very worst thing you can imagine to the very best thing you can imagine. So,
boy, if you ever wondered if Earth was a duality and that everything was a dichotomy, all you have to do is just... look and see how people can look at the exact same thing and derive two yeah. separate things from it. It's fascinating.
It is fascinating. It's, yeah. yeah. I'm going to say my reality is here.
Yeah.
Like you and, you know, I mean, I can only control what I can control. So.
Yeah. Things I've learned, you know, I think it's important to have a variety of routines
yeah.
that you do on a day-to-day basis. You know, if you're a routine person, if you want to get up and like clockwork, do the same routine over and over and yeah. over again. I mean, do that. If you're someone like me who, you know, wants some consistency, but also variety, you know, some things I've really taken for granted that now I'm not taking for granted. It would be like getting up and opening up the blinds, letting the outside come in, you know, opening up the, our windows and just letting some fresh air in.
Yeah.
You know, we're lucky enough to have a backyard. So we've been out in the backyard as much as we could. We've been able to, I mean, we've had some rain and apparently we have snow coming tomorrow. So, you know, that might.
Well, as long as our neighbors don't throw another end of the world party. Who the fuck does that on a Tuesday?
No, it was a Wednesday. We had the earthquake and all of a sudden their entire family was over and they were literally.
You're partying.
I was like, wow, okay, well, whatever.
I'll tell you, it was just like that scene in Independence Day where yeah. they're partying on the roof because the aliens are coming. That's what it felt like. I'm like, really? You really? Okay. Whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the best meme I saw is when by the time this pandemic's over, everyone's going to be an alcoholic or a really good cook. One of the two.
yeah. Feels like that. That was mm-hmm. That's another thing I would suggest is that, you know, you get up and get ready for the day. You know, rest when you need to rest. There's a lot of yeah. people that have been telling me how sleepy they are, how tired yeah. they are. And I'm like, sleep. Like, take advantage of it. You get to work from home now.
Yeah,
you
rest. Know?
I don't think people have realized how much their bodies take the load of stress of just a daily functioning.
Grind. Yeah.
You know, and I feel like that even though people are a little bit stressed about the economy and what's going to happen or their jobs and money, somehow I just know that it's all going to work out. And
these things pull okay. people together. They really do. They pull people together. So the economy could totally crash, whatever that means, you know, because the majority of people aren't into the stock market,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they tend to base the health of the, you know, the economy on the stock market for whatever reason. If the corporations are rich, then we must be doing good, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, from a low, you know, from the everyday guy, the, you know, our baristas and our, you know, the people serving at the restaurants and the fast food places and, you know, they're going to get hit pretty hard. And I think what you're going to see is I think people are going to come together and help them out. You know, we did it at 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
We had communities got stronger all over the planet.
Right.
You know, and I think that's what will happen. So, you know, look out for people and, you know, share food.
Yeah, we've really...
Food seems to be the biggest fear.
Yeah, we've people. Reached out to all of our neighbors and then yeah. some of the elderly that we know and have just made sure that they know that we're here to help and, yeah. you know, that we have each other's backs and things like
it's
that.
Gonna be okay.
All of our local family, even our family in, you know, Singapore, kind of mm-hmm. keeping track of them and what's going on with them. So
yeah.
strange times are kind of, depending on your perspective, it's kind of an yeah. incredible time to be alive.
Yeah. Well, do you want to talk about the Temple Way of Light?
I do.
I mean, like, you know, a lot of people tune in because they want to
hear about ayahuasca. Yeah. Well, I have to say that in all of my plant medicine journeys, I think that, man, the Temple of the Way of Light, just they do it right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to be up front here, though. I'm not going to talk about any of the specific like any of the women that were there. I'm not going to talk in any generalizations or any
not share their stories specifically.
Yeah. Not even generally.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep it private. So I'll just talk about me. I'm not going to talk about Kylie. She had great healing. Let's just put it that way. And at some point, maybe she'd be ready to do a podcast with us. I think that would be really fun to talk to her, but only when she's ready. I really feel like that I witnessed something pretty spectacular at the temple.
Yeah.
I have never felt so calm and centered going into an ayahuasca experience. Usually it's been pretty terrifying. I mean, like usually your heart's pounding and you're really scared and you've got a lot of fear. And that was just not my experience at the temple. It was like they took a very indigenous Shipibo practice.
So is the Shipibo tribe the one that conducts the ceremonies?
Yeah. And so the Shipibo, the way it worked with them was that they don't call themselves shamans. They call themselves maestros or maestras.
Mm-hmm.
We had 6 Shipibo maestras and then 1 Shipibo vigilista. And a vigilista is basically someone that is very proficient in botanical medicines.
Nice.
It was remarkable.
So, and just for anyone that hasn't listened to any of the earlier episodes, you went to an all-women retreat.
Yeah. So, I was going with my daughter, who's 20 now, and I gave her 3 places in Iquitos that I have known about that I've had other people that have gone to, one of which was the place I've been to 3 times, and then another place, and then the Temple of the Way of Light. And she chose the Temple of the Way of Light because they had an all-women's retreat. And that meant even women maestras and women facilitators. So we had 6, Shipibo maestras. And then there were about 7 facilitators. There were 3 main facilitators. But I mean, there were 7, I'll call them gringos, even though they're from, you know, all over the world.
They're from everywhere but Peru.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just phenomenal. It was really just a phenomenal space, and it was just, you know, I couldn't have asked for a better group of women in every aspect. Mm. And like I said, the temple does it right. I mean, some of the differences from the other place that I went to, probably one of the biggest differences, is their medicine is ayahuasca. Ayahuasca is just ayahuasca and chakruna.
No extra plants.
There was no other extra plants, but they filter and screen their medicine. And it's...
That'd be so nice.
So there's no bits or sand or grit or whatnot.
Every time I got the last cup from the bottle, yeah. Oh, God.
No, this place is professional. And I would say and the medicine doesn't have a lot of liquid content to it. So it was kind of viscous.
Hmm.
More viscous, very kind of like muddy almost.
Yeah.
But
you took a smaller dose, right? And you were saying like a shot glass instead of like a...
Well, I had heard before at the other place that, you know, that you don't want to drink water after you drink ayahuasca because it creates nausea and gastrointestinal, you know, distress.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my other place, it was 8-10 ounce cups that you're drinking, that you're guzzling down, or you're trying to guzzle down. It's very difficult to do. So I was a little bit shocked when I sat down at the first ceremony and they handed me just a regular shot glass and it was three quarters of the way full, which is like a swallow.
You're like, you know, this is not my first rodeo.
Well, no, I mean, I sort of just went into...
kind of went with it.
I was in observation mode.
I probably would have had that thought. Like, yeah. Really? Come on. Really?
I really wasn't judging the experience. I was really just open to everything and just... Yeah. And I was a little bit shocked and I was a little bit irritated thinking that, wow, all of that, you know, nausea and gastrointestinal distress that I'd had at the other place could have been avoidable if the shaman at the other place had, you know, cared to...
cook it down.
Yeah, cook his brew a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. You know, and I struggled with that. I'll be honest. I struggled with the, comparing the two
sanctuaries.
I was really kind of upset towards the end.
Yeah.
And because these five cups of ayahuasca, you know, this particular trip to Peru was so productive for me.
Yeah.
And anyway, so... I'm going to call the temple's medicine clean. It was very clean. It was very clear. Hmm. And I would say that definitely helped with the connection that I was able to make with ayahuasca. And she didn't waste any time to connect to me. I've always been bothered by the fact that everybody else has visioned, but I haven't visioned. I still don't know why that is, you know. But I will say that I have never visioned so heavily, clearly, and so deep. And just
having... So what do you attribute that to? Do you think that's just it was your time to vision? Mm-hmm. Or do you think that the medicine was clearer, cleaner, so it was a stronger connection? What do you think?
I think it was probably a combination of all of that. But yeah. In hindsight now, I can see at the other place how ayahuasca was almost trying to... get past the other plants that were in the brew. Like at the other place, I know there were several other plants that they were using.
Mm-hmm.
And how
they were called teacher plants, but
yeah, I don't know. I'm questioning everything at the other place only because
the experience was that much.
When I started really asking more questions, there were some contradictory, you know, information that I was being told at the temple versus the other place.
Could be a difference between tribes because you got two tribes, right? One tribe at the one place, Shipibo at the second, or what do you think?
Well, again, here's my intuition is that, you know, the Shipibo sing their Icaros in Shipibo language, not in Spanish.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's non-denominational, so there's absolutely no Christian influence.
Yeah. That always bothered me about the Icaros. I'm like, really? How did Jesus get into this? And why did the plants teach you about Jesus?
Well, and if you know anything about, you know, the Spanish conquistadors.
Yeah.
You know, and so.
They raped everything.
Right. And so here's my take is that you have these indigenous practices with these indigenous tribes like the Shipibo that are actually singing their Icaros in their native tongue,
mm-hmm.
which that would make sense mm-hmm. if the practice is ancient, right?
Right.
And then you have copycats.
Right.
You have, you know, other maybe tribes whose, you know, great, great, great grandfathers were like, well, we want to be shamans too.
Yeah.
And so they make up their own, you know, Icaros and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't really going to talk about this because I feel like I'm a little bitter about it.
Wow.
But so, I know everything happens for a reason.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had an enormous amount of
So just talk more about the Temple Way of Light.
Yeah.
So we don't need to compare. You know, when people are going to do ayahuasca, they're going to get called to a place. You know?
Yeah, true.
You find something, you click with it.
Yep.
You know, and so, you know, wherever you find yourself, I'm sure that's where you're supposed mm-hmm. to be. So.
No, I know. And you know, again, in hindsight, as I'm looking over all of my plant medicine experiences and my integration has been really difficult. And to think that maybe had I worked with, you know, these shamans from the beginning with a cleaner medicine and I had a better connection with ayahuasca, you know, I think in my head, I'm thinking, well, maybe my integrations would have been easier,
yeah,
you know, and not so difficult, but you know, it's probably not true.
Yeah. Here it's we are. Not true. So,
yeah. Let's see. One of the things that I absolutely loved about the temple is how they were consciously aware of the fears, certain fears surrounding certain aspects of ayahuasca and how they really tried to make you feel really comfortable. For instance, they do something called a vomitivo the day that you take ayahuasca for the first time. So you wake up, you meet at the maestra's houses, at 7 a.m. and they give you a big bowl of warm tea, and you drink that, and then you drink five more bowls of water until you basically puke. Yeah. And the reason being is that it's to help, you know, clean you out physically, but also energetically.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people have phobias around throwing up. I'm one of them. Right. And so I'll be honest, I had a little bit of a meltdown as I'm watching everybody, you know, go through this process. I'm like, oh my gosh, like I started to shake. I had some fear, and then it was my turn, and, you know, I was able to, vomit and everything, or purge. And, you know, what's kind of nice about it is that you're not really, that sort of was a fear that was eliminated for me right walking into the first ceremony. The other thing that I loved is that they do their flower bath, like at 5 o'clock nighttime, the day of the ceremony, which other places they do it for you the next morning after, ayahuasca. And I enjoyed the fact that we did it before. One, because it made you feel like all flowery. They're very, you know, and it just, it was very shocking to the system. It's cold water. So it just feels good, you know?
Yeah.
And then you go back to your tambo, and we changed, and then you're supposed to be back in the maloka at 6:30 for yoga.
Hmm.
And so that's what we did. And it was nice. There was no like 4 hours of waiting. There was no like this. Other places will have quiet time, and then you wait for like 4 hours, and there's like this buildup of anxiety and fear that happens.
Yeah.
The temple, the first 3 days, really did right by us by keeping us quite busy, you know, either with information about ayahuasca or information about, you know, how the talking circles were going to work, or the, you know, the somatic processing that we were going to do. I mean, I really just enjoyed how they did everything to help keep your mind from wandering around and making things into, you know, scarier situations. So we get there at 6:30, and then we would do yoga for an hour, you know, basically a variety of yin yogas or some meditation, some breathing things. One night we sang, it was beautiful.
So did you find that calmed everybody down, stilled everybody's minds?
Oh, or? Yeah. And it was so nice because, you know, sitting in one place for 5 hours, you know, is physically tiring.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love too, this maloka was massive.
Yeah.
So there were 23 women, and they put us on the perimeter of the maloka. We each had our own like foam mattress. So we were basically in a big circle, and then there was 6 or 7, maybe even 8 foam mattresses in the middle. And that's where the maestros were going to be. And then we had the facilitators in the room as well. And these were sort of compassion care individuals, you know, helping us to the bathroom if we needed, that kind of help, or there were some people that just needed, you know, to talk through some things during ceremony, which they allow, which I think is great. But yeah, we did the yoga an hour before we would actually, the ceremony would begin. And, you know, there were minutes where I forgot that, oh yeah, we're about to take ayahuasca. I mean, that's how calm I was.
Yeah.
Well, so great cool. for the nervous system to be so calm before you take an entheogen, you know what I mean? And so the other thing that I really appreciated was literally right on the dot, 7:30, maestros walked in, and they didn't waste any time. You weren't sitting there, you know,
7:30.
Yeah.
So we started a little bit earlier.
Yeah. So we'd be there at 6:30. It would start at 7:30, and they didn't waste any time. It was immediately they began to do their preparations, smoke their mapacho, start to clear the space, you know, same with the other facilitators. And they did that about 15, 20 minutes. And then they began to have people come up to the front and do the ayahuasca. And the very first ceremony, they made it really clear, hey, we've got 23 people, you know, to drink ayahuasca. So let's make sure we make it productive. Don't mess around. Yeah. Right. They gave everybody this exact same amount the first ceremony, which is that 3/4 cup of a shot glass. And we trucked through that pretty quick, which was really, really nice. It wasn't, you know,
people smoking mapacho before or after they took their drink.
Yeah. You had the option. They gave you mapacho that the maestros grew themselves and prepared themselves. Everything that basically was put in our bodies as far as botanicals, because we were working with 5 different botanical drinks. I really felt like I was in a Shipibo hospital.
Yeah.
And I've never experienced anything like that. Another unique thing at the temple was the Ryoaniti that they also gave you, which is basically like a perfume water, flower water. And I'm not going to go into much detail about that, but that's just as important as Mapacho.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to know more about that, go to the temple.
excuse me.
So, yeah. So we took the ayahuasca. And then the other very unique thing about the way that they were doing things. And again, I don't know how this works in a mixed group because I just went to the women's group.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that I think they usually only have five maestros or three maestras and two maestros is what I think I heard. So it's kind of unique that we had six maestras. But the way that it would work is once everyone took the ayahuasca, they'd begin to sing their Icaros, and they'd sing a collective Icaros together on the mats in the middle. And then they would get on the floor and take their positions around the room staggered. And then we each got sung a personal Icaro. So six personal Icaros in about 5-6 hours.
Hmm.
I mean, and I have to tell you, these women, some of them are older.
Yeah. They're just scooting around on the floor.
Yeah. And
how cool is that Icaro when all of them sing it together?
Oh my gosh. I'll be honest. Like the first ceremony, we had a maestro that was also there. So we had six maestros and one of the male shamans. And I mean, it was like I was at Carnegie Hall or something. It was the most amazing. I started to weep. It was so beautiful.
I don't think people understand what
the Icaros.
Thank you. I'm like at loss. Like, what's that word? I don't think people understand what's the purpose of an Icaro.
Well, so this is how it's frequency. If you know anything about cymatics, some people call it chymatics.
Yeah.
It's basically frequency. And this is how they interact with our subatomic particles. Some of the indigenous tribes call it the Icaros. They say that the Icaros are able to conjure the Dr. Sitas. After being at the Temple of the Way of Light, these maestras were the Dr. Sitas. I had surgery performed on me at one point, my heart, where I walked around the next day almost for 24 hours putting my hand over my heart because I wanted to protect whatever it was that they had just done to my heart.
Through frequency.
There were tons of people. Like, in fact, every single one of the women, I think, had said that they had had not just heart surgery, all kinds of different types.
Yeah.
Of surgeries. And when you had taken the medicine and when they were sitting in front of me and they started to sing,
so they're directing,
they were directing the visions.
Yeah.
They were directing the energy, and you could feel the portion of your body that they were working. Also, something to note too, that I had never really paid attention to, is that every single one of these maestras, because they're real maestras and these are real, Dr. Sitas or whatnot, they took the shaman's brew.
Mm.
And that was eye-opening, all five ceremonies, you know, which makes sense. If you've done your work yourself, then you shouldn't be afraid to take the shaman brew, the maestro brew, so that you can connect and link in to the people that you're facilitating for. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not what it was at my other place. They had one dude drink it, and then everybody else, I guess, quote, LinkedIn. I don't know. But
try not to be bitter. I know. It's just a different place.
I know. I'm just a little irritated. Well, you know what it is that there's nothing worse than feeling like that you've just participated in an indigenous ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, perspective, right? You go and you participate in another indigenous ceremony, only to realize that, oh, that's actually an indigenous ceremony.
Yeah. I mean,
the other one was kind of a knockoff.
It's kind of like seeing the orchestra play at elementary school and then going to New York and seeing it play in Carnegie Hall or whatever.
I mean,
you're like, oh, okay. There's a little difference in quality, but
anyone listening, you know, if you're thinking about going to work with ayahuasca, you know, in Costa Rica or Brazil or, you know, in Peru, you know, there's a couple things I would ask the shamans. I would ask if it's non-denominational, you know, like, what are the, you know, do you have Icaros? First of all, if you're taking ayahuasca and you're not, there's not a trained professional that is singing Icaros, you know, buyer beware, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
If it's not done in a maloca, man, I learned a lot about malocas, this last time, like buyer beware, like, you know, you better know what your Merkaba or your Merkaba is and know how to protect yourself because yeah, I just, you know, I just couldn't imagine opening up the way that I did this last time.
Yeah.
And not having the protection of the maestras of the Icaros and the maloca.
Yeah. Maloca, for again, people that don't know, that's the building that you're in.
Yeah, it's a round building, kind of with a very high pitched roof, but it conducts energy. And I got to see kind of behind the scenes this time with ayahuasca. And I'm not going to go into much detail because I feel so privileged that I was able to see. So grateful that I was able to see what I was able to see. But I and I'll probably talk more about this, in the near future. Mm-hmm. I really came back feeling like I needed to be more of an advocate for ayahuasca and how ayahuasca is presented and how ayahuasca is actually taken. Mm. You know, I'm not saying that you can't get some healing from doing one dose of ayahuasca somewhere, you know, listening to a guitar player, you know, in an urban setting. You know, I'm sure that there's something that you could derive from that, but that is not the way that these plants were meant to be taken. And there's a reason why these plants were meant to be taken in the Amazon jungle with the support of the other plants, you know, or, you know, well, yeah, in the jungle with the support of the other plants in a maloca, yeah. You know, with the shamans or the maestros or maestras with the Icaros being sung.
Yeah.
And I would add to that, also with the support of the Mapacho and also the support of the Raiwaniti. So, I mean, I think I've come back feeling a little bit more empowered about saying things like that because part of my experience going down this time was almost like ayahuasca opened up the double doors for me, sort of to the back office and said, here, come here. I want you to see something.
Yeah.
And I was like, and then I got to experience that for myself. So, yeah. So I got to experience some healing in what I would call, like, you know, in a dirtier setting with dirty medicine. And then I got to experience it with clean medicine and the way that it's really supposed to be delivered.
Yeah.
With a little bit of a Western twist because of the yoga, you know. Anyway, so I don't know what I was saying. I got off track, but
no, it's okay. I mean, you know, one thing I think you should talk about is you had some work done on your guts, right? Like, is that something?
Yeah. So
that's mind blowing to me. I know before you left, you weren't able to eat
quinoa or
kale specifically.
Yeah. Quinoa was really not my friend.
Yeah.
And I did this bowel detox. So I shut down my digestion for 15 days before I went. And then, well, actually, it was more than that. I guess I really prepared for almost 2 months. Then I get down there and I'm basically eating the same things I was eating at home. You know, your beans, lots of salads, basically a lot of fiber-rich foods.
Mm-hmm.
The temple also offered sometimes fish and chicken for those people that you know, eat that way.
Yeah.
Let's see. So one of the things they had us do was they had us each come into the maloca one afternoon. And we did a medical kind of diagnostic, yeah, where we got to sit down with all six of the maestros and the vigilista and talk about anything that we were suffering from.
Yeah.
So I went in, talked to him about what was going on with my intestines, my bowels, really, and, you know, kind of my medical history and what I've been trying to do. And so they ordered a gut massage. And so basically a belly massage. And then they had me drinking something called Santa Maria, which is also called Feverfew. And then five other botanicals. So combinations of like ginger, and turmeric and some other botanicals. I don't have the paper in front of me, otherwise I'd read them off. But and everybody was taking the five botanicals, and then anybody that had you know, extra issues, then we were drinking the Santa Maria, which, you know, just kind of tasted like smoky bark. It wasn't bad. And then the following day, some of us were prescribed poultices. Some of us were prescribed like gut massages and things, or massages. And they did that twice on me. So it was funny because we did that, or I had the massage, both massages. And then the next day they fed us a salad that had quinoa in it. And I had a moment where I was like, I don't know if I should eat that. Like, last thing I want to do is, you know, have gastrointestinal issues. Yeah. And walking into, you know, ayahuasca that night, I was like, ah, screw it. Like, I'll just eat it. And I had no issues whatsoever. So that was kind of bizarre. The other thing too is that I had what I know now to be the high heart. I'd always thought the high heart was layered on top of the heart. That's not the case. The high heart is actually in the gut, right around where the belly's at, the belly button is at. And so, like, it's the aortic artery that attaches itself to the gut. And if you put your fingers right there on your belly button, you'll feel what feels like another heartbeat. Mm-hmm. That's actually the high heart. And most of the massaging that they did on me was right there, which was not, it was interesting because I'd never
massage heart.
It didn't feel very good. It was very tight and hard, almost, that area of my abdomen.
Oh.
And they just sat there. They put this, they put ginger, they took grated ginger, and they would squeeze it over our bellies or our backs or whatnot. And then they used a menthol, a kind of like a menthol, so peppermint oil as well. And then they would just massage and then they'd blow on your back or your belly, and it felt really good, yeah. You know, but it was interesting because the first time she did it, I was really tender and sore. Then the second time she did it, which was a day and a half later, it was definitely way more, you know, loose and pliable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now it's completely pliable. It's like whatever she did, you know, and then I think also with the Ikaros, you know, I felt like that they were in my abdomen a few times doing things with, you know, my gut and my bowels and things like that. So it was incredible. I'm still processing. I have not begun to integrate. I learned a lot about mandalas. I know who I am now. I know what my path is.
Yeah.
I have no idea how any of it's going to play out. I don't even care.
It'll come to you.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah,
I'm going to be, yeah. and the power in just being and being open and realizing that, you know, everyone has a path, every single person, and
they have a part to play.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Every single person.
Listening to you and Kylie after you guys came home, I'm going.
Yeah. I know you're excited.
Yeah, no, I'm going in November, and I guess after talking to our oldest, he's like, yeah, I'm in. I'm like, right on.
Listen, every time I have been to Peru, the very last day or even the last, you know, ceremony of ayahuasca, I've always said, why am I doing this? Like, this is crap. Like, this is so difficult. Like, I'm never doing this again. Right.
Yeah.
And I got done with my fifth ceremony, which I've never done five ceremonies of ayahuasca. It's only been four. And I was like, I want to do five more.
Yeah.
You know, I wished I've always thought that, crazy, you know, more than five was ridiculous. I get it now. I think next time I go down there, I think they have a 7-day.
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking about doing.
Yeah.
The 7-day.
I mean, I think, you know, I wish
the seven cup.
I'm like, I wish I could go with you, but, you know,
I know
it, it would be difficult.
Yeah, we'll be going together the next time.
I just, and I think I would definitely do a mixed group. You know, not that anything was wrong with just the ladies, but the first night that we were there, the first ceremony that we had, there was this maestro, and man, there was something about his voice that was so healing for me. And so, you know, then the rest of the nights it was just maestros, which was great and it was beautiful. You know, don't get me wrong, but I don't know. I think it was more just you know, to be continued, Cammy. You know, next time you come down, it will be a mixed, you know, mixed group. Here's your
taste for next time.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. But I'd highly recommend it. It's real healing. The women, man, I tell you what, all 23 of those women showed up to do work.
Yeah.
And I was so impressed with the diversity of all of the women and lots of older people there. And I was just like, this is a good sign.
Yeah, I don't think ayahuasca is meant for the 20-year-olds.
Oh, you don't?
Nope.
I'm like, our daughter just went down.
I mean, just the 20-year-olds.
Oh, okay. I'm like, what?
I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, because it seems like this psychedelic movement, it seems like we were, because we're in our early 40s, it seemed like that, you know, when we first went, we were like on the, you know, everyone.
The upside. We were kind of the older crowd.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, because the psychedelic movement's been happening, you know, for, I don't know, 10 years. Tops, this new wave.
Yeah, I would say definitely new wave, there's been a flourishing but an expansion. Yeah, really,
I mean, I think anybody at any stage of life, I think, can benefit from that. You know, it cracks me up sometimes when I talk to people and they're like, well, I don't know, I haven't had any trauma in my life. And it's like, well, life's traumatic, first of all. Mm-hmm. Second of all, that's not all what these plants do. They help you expand your consciousness.
Yeah, I think that was one of the coolest things for me was, you know, I've been working at healing every day for almost 6 years. 6 years for me will be the 29th of this month.
Yeah.
And what's just absolutely remarkable is the validation that I'm done healing. Not that I'm not going to have to tweak things. I'll be tweaking things the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And learning things clearly, because of course, the more I know, the more I realize I just don't know anything, and I'll be spending the rest of my life trying to educate myself and expand. Yeah. What ayahuasca showed me was that, well, pretty much ayahuasca was like, yeah, you're going to come down and see me every couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, so get this out of your brain that, you know, you're done working. Just because you're done using the plants to heal doesn't mean you're done working with the plants. And then she showed me another way I could use her, and that was mind blowing. I'm just blown away. I'm blown away. I really am. I have no words.
Well, the plants are a technology as well as a medicine. And
yeah,
I think it's your human right.
It's a birthright.
Yeah. Everyone should have some time with these plants.
So. Yeah.
I can tell, you know, it's the one thing I tell people all the time. There's not many times in your life where you can pick one moment where your entire life did a complete 180 and has never gone backwards.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I've had lots of good times in my life and some bad times, more good times than bad times, I think, for the most part. Until I took my first cup of ayahuasca, and then life has dramatically gotten better. Still, it has dips on its way up. Nothing goes straight up, you know, but it's been an up trajectory the entire time. It just gets better and better and better. You have to put the work in, you know, you have to look at what's presented to you. You know, basically you're constantly being showed things you need to tweak, you need to look at, you need to find a different perspective, you need to heal, blah, blah, blah. But the rewards are, I mean, you just can't argue with the rewards.
You really can't even quantify them. I mean, there was a time in my life where I just didn't want, I wanted to have some control over not drinking.
Yeah.
You know, I think about that, and I think about where I was at, and I think about where I'm at now, and I'm just so grateful.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I'm to a point in a place now where, you know, I'll do whatever I need to do.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, to help the greater good, whatever it is, whatever I need to do, be an advocate for the plants in whatever way and capacity.
Yeah. Well, you know, it seems when we have as many people on this spinning rock as we have, it seems like we're always going to have, you know, leader type people that need to be in place to help us kind of move along. And it should be nice someday if the prerequisite for being a leader was you have to have
plant medicines
and you had to work with plant medicines. Like Graham Hancock says that all the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's so true.
And instead, I mean, like, you just look at emotional equanimity, and I think, gosh, what would it be like if we had leaders, or if we had, well, yeah, if we had leaders that had some emotional equanimity, if they even knew what that meant.
Yeah.
You know, and that they were just really great, thriving examples of you know, what a human could be. I think that's on the horizon. I really do. Yeah. I think we're going through a shift. I think that's what's happening. I think that's what we're seeing right now. I think that's what we're in right now is a remarkable shift. And I just don't know how it's all going to play out. I just have a trust and a lot of faith in the earth, because, you know, we forget that we're made out of earth stuffs, that we're an extension of earth, and that whatever's happening to us has been happening to earth for some time.
If you want to see what your relationship is with the earth, just sit through an earthquake. Yeah. You figure out really quick that you're tiny.
I know. We were talking about this last night. Like, oh, stupid little humans. You think that like you can control anything? Like, that's not true.
It puts your place on this planet in perspective very quickly. Like, oh, the ground's moving. you know? And it's not even, anyway. It's,
you know, for me personally, I feel like that I've come back and I feel like that it's a new chapter for me.
Yeah.
And I just feel super, super open. Really surrendered, and you know, I have no idea how anything's going to play out. I don't think that I've had the download yet as to what's going to happen. I want to talk a little bit about integration though, because, there was this woman, at the sanctuary, and she was one of the facilitators, that works with, Dr. Gabor Mate. Uh-huh. He's one of her teachers. And let me just, her name is, I think her name is Deanna Rose.
Gabor Mate is an incredible human. Anybody doesn't know who he is, go look up his videos.
Yeah, let me just really quick. She's an integration specialist. And I would totally, I think that she would be someone that if anybody's struggling with any sort of integration after plant medicines, to reach out to her. Oh, it's Deanna Rogers. So deannacroges@gmail.com. But I think she also has a website that could be deannarogers.com or deannacrogers.com. She does this kind of somatic processing that was brilliant. And she did this in the talking circles. So for instance, somebody that visioned heavily, that had like, you know, crazy visions, right? Yeah. She was able to ask them first, you know, well, what was your intention? And she was able to help them process the visions that they had, without really ever discussing the visions. Visions are metaphorical for the most part, sometimes not so much, but for the most part, they are metaphorical. And watching her take somebody that was off in the boondocks up in there, you know, like talking about their visions and refocusing them on the feelings about what they were having, and asking some brief questions. I mean, we're talking like maybe three questions in, and that you could watch the person go down another line of thought and really be able to process and integrate the vision that they had. I think she lives up in Canada somewhere. She was incredible and remarkable. I would definitely recommend anybody that's struggling. There were the people that did do ayahuasca before. Nobody had done ayahuasca in an indigenous setting. Okay. Except for me in the group. The other people that had done ayahuasca, not in an indigenous setting, were struggling and had struggled with the other ayahuasca experiences that they had. And, you know, and then it really made me realize, I wondered how many other people are like that have had these crazy visions. They have no idea what they mean. And, you know, it's led them down thought streams that probably haven't been very productive in their lives.
Yeah.
And she just seems to be very real. I just really liked her process. You know, a lot of the times when we'd start to talk, or when I'd start to talk, she would say, you know, how are you feeling, Cammy? You know, and then I'd be able to articulate, okay, well, this is how I'm feeling. And then she'd say, well, where are you feeling that in your body? and you could pinpoint where it was at in the body, right? Mm. And then she'd say, where is that not happening in the body? And you'd say, okay, well, it's not happening in my legs. And she'd say, okay, just focus on your legs for a little bit, you know? And it helped calm down the nervous system, you know? And just, it was just remarkable the way in which she was integrating after, you know, after the ceremonies. Now that I have been home, a couple of things that I had forgotten that really helped me to integrate is, and watching some of the other women come home and integrate, there's this, when you've had such a profound spiritual experience and such profound healing, sometimes what you want to do is come home and implement everything, you know? So you're getting all these downloads about, you know, well, this is what I should, you know, I should have more of a set schedule and I should be more positive and I should do my gratitudes and I should do my yoga and I should do my meditation and I should eat better, you know, and I should do this and this. And next thing you know, while you're at ayahuasca, you have completely rewritten your entire life and the script for your life and your routine for your life. And that's great, right? It's good to be aware of all those things.
Yeah.
It's actually not a great thing to come home and attempt to implement all of those things because now you've set yourself up for a disaster.
Yeah.
And so now that we're almost a month out, some of the phone calls and emails I'm getting is, I don't feel like anything that I learned in ayahuasca is sticking, you know, or now I'm really depressed or I'm really tired. First of all, that's all normal. You've just worked with one of the biggest nootropics on the planet. Your brain is remapping and rewiring.
Yeah.
You're going to be foggy headed. You're going to be little bit lethargic. You're going to have some interesting, you know, brain fog. You're going to be really tired and all this is normal. And so what I realized without really knowing that this is my process is, you know what I do when I come home from ayahuasca is I jump right back into my routine 100% and everything I was doing before. And then I observe myself and I write down little things, you know, my thoughts, my judgments.
Are you looking for something as you observe yourself?
No, I'm just literally just observing myself because when you work with the plant medicines, you've now shifted your perspectives and you've brought in this awareness. So now you're going to look at yourself from a completely different viewpoint.
Yeah.
And then I just observe and then it's like, I focus in on something and go, oh, okay, well let's work on this.
Yep.
And I only work on one thing at a time because I've learned that it's those small little changes, those small little movements that I make that create a lifetime of change.
Yeah.
And so that would be that, that's something that I, you know, I don't know if this would help anybody, but give yourself a break after you've worked with ayahuasca.
I think anybody takes ayahuasca and figures it out the first try, or do you think most people do it two or three times so they can?
No idea.
Yeah. I don't either. I just, you know, I just wondered. I mean, definitely, you know, for me, the first time I took it, it turned my world upside down. So.
Yeah. I've been told by everybody it's a practice.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that in hindsight now here, I've done what, like, I don't know how many cups of ayahuasca, like 17 or something like that. So not very many. Right. But I can tell you that, I learned some things I'm going to do next time.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
yeah.
I'm like, oh, like, you know, especially now that I felt so safe at the Temple of the Way of Light. It's like, oh, okay. Well, the next time that I go.
Yeah. It seemed like you didn't know how unsafe you felt at the other place until you got a good dose of what safe felt like.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
Yeah. Again, like and those aren't productive safe thoughts.
Yeah. But yeah. I mean, like safe. Like what? Energetically or safe that you're going to have people with machetes dock at the beach or whatever?
Yeah. I mean, they did tell us that during our ceremonies there at the temple that they had, you know, people that had, you know, that were patrolling the area with guns.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, ladies' hands were shooting up like, well, do we have something to be afraid of? And she goes, just the opposite. We say that to you so that you know that you're completely protected.
Yeah.
The other thing that I loved is there was some, they encourage you to spend the night in the Maloka, which I had never actually done before. I never felt safe spending the night in the Maloka. And I did four of the five nights I stayed in the Maloka, and they had someone there, until 6 a.m. in the morning, basically till the sun came up to help you. And they were like, there were times where, you know, I'm in the middle of the night pee-er, right?
Uh-huh.
And so like I got up. went to use the bathroom. Sure, the guy's still there and helping you. If you needed help, he was helping you down the stairs and shining the light of which bathroom was open. Wow. They were also constantly cleaning up the bathrooms for us. Everything was they were awesome.
Yeah.
They were really just awesome. So, anyways, I hope that helps with the integration piece. I'll track down Deanna Rogers' website, because this is what she does for a living, is integration.
She worked there?
Well, it's interesting. She just came for the women's retreat.
To be
a facilitator. And I'm so glad to have met her. I mean, she was a powerful presence, and she had worked at the temple for, I guess, 4 years, and then moved to Canada, you know, married, has a child now. I just really appreciated her. I also appreciated another remarkable woman, Sam and Juliana, and they were the facilitators inside of the ceremony. Man, those women, I mean, dedicating their life like they do, just brilliant, beautiful women, inside and out. And I can't say enough great things about them as well. And, just really pure, connected, powerful people, humans. Everything, the kitchen staff was amazing. I just felt the maestros were cool.
Yeah.
The other thing that was nice was nobody was trying to be a standout. Like they told us up front, hey, we're still doing our process and we're all healing too. You know, we're working horizontally with what you're working on.
Oh,
you know, there was no person sitting at the table pontificating.
I know all the answers.
Right. You know, ask me questions for hours. I'll tell you all the answers,
can't stand that. Well, plus everybody's different anyways. You know, I think it's good to share experiences, but like what works for you doesn't work for me necessarily.
They had an area in the cafeteria area where you could go sit down at a table. It was the quiet table. So you didn't have to talk to anybody. You know, there was
like they labeled it the quiet table.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like at the silent table, I think. So there was no, if you had an experience you didn't want to talk about the next day, you could just go sit down there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I know some people, not so much the people that I went with, but I know some other people that use that table every day for every meal.
Well, you know, I remember there were, you know, after my third ceremony, which was hard, really hard, you know, the last thing I wanted to do was talk to anybody.
Yeah.
Would have been a nice option. I remember sitting there and, you know, people were like talking about, you know, how amazing it was and the Panthers and all the pretty lights. And I'm like, yeah, that's not what I had.
Yeah.
But, that's cool. Little things like that, I think are nice little details,
mm-hmm.
you know, as they watch the struggles that people have, you know, cause it's, you know, when some of the things you experience are hard.
And yeah,
sometimes
I mean,
you're lost for words, you know, and sometimes you just want to go inside and just not talk.
The women in my group showed up to work and I was just
so good.
I was so freaking impressed. Yeah. I was like, it was remarkable.
Yeah.
You know, energy. I did have a moment where I was like, I really feel bad for the guys that they're not going to be able to experience a women's retreat, but
most men experience a men's retreat because the majority of the time it's mostly men.
Yeah, well, what was interesting is there was a woman there from, I think it was Australia, and she was talking about in Australia there's a bunch of men's retreats for like their local tribes and things.
Mm-hmm.
She says they're super powerful, that sometimes she's been there helping to kind of facilitate or organize.
Mm.
And so, I mean, that'd be great if the temple were to do a men's retreat, or if, you know, men were to find men's retreats. I think that would be an incredible experience for, you know, the kind of the masculine energy.
Well, I'm going to just throw that out to the universe. If I go in November, why don't we just make it a men's retreat?
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was nice to do ayahuasca with a bunch of women because most of my experiences have been with men.
Yeah.
I've been, you know, one of, sometimes the only woman, sometimes one of five women. I think the most amount of women were five women at one time.
Yeah.
And so I just, I think that was a really powerful experience. And we had a moment, I think I'll share this because I don't think anyone would care, but we had a moment after third ceremony, which is always pretty intense.
Yeah.
And the room got the giggles. And I'm not kidding, little giggles. I'm talking like ridiculous roaring giggles.
Yeah.
And then the maestro started to laugh. And so we had, it was so beautiful. It was like this moment of just almost like we were having a massive sleepover.
Yeah.
In any other, you know, sanctuary that might have been seen as disrespectful. But it was just the funniest thing. And we just started to giggle. And then when the maestros would leave, the facilitator, I think it was usually Sam, that was like, you know, thank you, maestra, you know, so-and-so. And I don't know why it was, but collectively we said we were doing this woo. So there's 23 women. Instead of clapping, we were going woo. And it was just beautiful. Yeah. It was like honoring, you know, the women that were helping the women that were facilitating the main woman, you know?
This sort of touches on one of my favorite parts that I enjoy, you know, going to these retreats, because it's like everybody shows up ready to work and we're all working on the same thing. So it's that camaraderie that let's fucking dig our feet in. Let's do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of cool. Cause it's, again, this is not like a psychedelic vacation. This is,
oh my gosh.
Well, some people think it is, but this is work. You're working on your soul. Like this is,
yeah,
this well, is work.
And there's two experiences happening. There's right. the experience that's happening within the ceremonies, and then there's the experience that's happening outside of the ceremonies.
Yeah.
And everybody's reflecting and projecting
on each other
and yeah. everybody's mirroring back at it's each other. Rough. It's very, very intense.
Yeah.
And you know, that's it's mind blowing.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of cool. We were each given a tambo, which is basically like a cabin. And it was screened in. So I felt very safe, but it's
no little critters are crawling under doors or anything.
Not really. No, I was kind of shocked about that, but there's no electricity in the tambos. And so they give you oil lamps,
yeah.
but keep in mind, we did five ceremonies and we were there for what was it? 9 nights.
Yeah.
So really 5 nights we're in the Maloka. We're not really in our tambos.
Yeah.
And because of not having the electricity, we're not really drawing in the bugs. Yeah, it was very comfortable. I was very comfortable.
Except for the heat.
Yeah. Well, so we went during the wet season.
Yeah.
And so I was expecting lots of rain. We did have quite a bit of rain. It was awesome. I love the Amazonian, thunderstorms, thunder and lightning storms are just, there's just nothing like them. And it gets very cool. So we're in the middle of the jungle because we really hiked a couple of miles into the jungle, away from the river. And I was thinking that we would have more mosquitoes, but it wasn't like that. So we actually had issues with ants. At least I did. I was getting eaten alive by ants. Nobody else seemed to have that problem but me, But at one point, one of the facilitators told me that I must have, the ants seem to like savory and sweet blood and that I must have both. That makes sense based on the state of my ankles and my back. But anyways, the last couple of days that we were there, it was unbearable for me. I mean, yeah. It was so hot. It was so ridiculously humid. And I was just, it was like I was raining.
Yeah.
From the inside out. But ayahuasca always works like this with me. It's doing like she
poor detox.
Yeah, she lures me in a skin detox for real though. It's like she lures me in and I do my work and it's like as soon as I'm done doing my work, she spits me out because
I go home.
Well, my work is in the human jungle. My work isn't in the Amazonian jungle.
Yeah.
You know, and of course when you're in the Amazon, at some point your mind kind of drifts to, you know, oh, I'd love to live here. You know, and so
no.
The Amazon likes to make it really clear to me that that's not my place. Like, nope, yeah. You belong in the urban human jungle. That's where you be. That's where your work is. So
I remember thinking that the last time I was there, I'm like, you know, I could live here. Oh, this is great.
Yeah. No, you cannot.
No.
Yeah. So I feel resolved.
Aww.
You know, I feel like a new chapter. I feel like that I'm open to whatever comes my way.
Yeah. It sounds like that you, if people are looking for a recommendation, you'd definitely recommend this place.
I really would. I don't know if I'll go work at any other place for a long time, as long as their setup is the same and they have access to these indigenous, as long as they have their partnership with the indigenous Shipibo maestras and maestros.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a beautiful property too. the kind of the permaculture thing that they're doing there.
It's big too, right? Because mm-hmm. they had another whole other area doing retreats as well, right?
Yeah, they had at the same time, they had another, I guess they have another ayahuasca center that's up on the hill, and they were in the middle of a 23-day retreat, which was like ayahuasca, and then they were doing a plant dieta.
Wow.
Yeah. And
how many cups were they doing for that? Like seven or nine?
I think it was seven. And then, of course, they were dieting on this one heart opening plant. And I said to one of the ladies, I'm like, oh, Bobinsana? She's like, oh, no. Bobinsana is known to be a very harsh heart opening plant. So, no, most of the maestros do not recommend that anyone ever diet on Bobinsana. It was another plant, and I don't remember.
Did you clench your fist and wave it at the air?
I did just a little bit. Just like Tiny Moroni that lost his trumpet. Mm. Yeah. But, yeah, so they...
Nobody knows what that means.
I know.
It's an inside earthquake joke. Anyways.
But something very interesting also about the temple is there's almost zero waste.
Oh, that's cool.
They compost everything.
Yeah.
Everything is compostable.
So it's possible.
Oh, absolutely. Even the toilets were compostable toilets, which...
Are they filtering their own water?
No, I believe they carried it in. I tell you what, the staff, the people that bring in the food and the water... Like, oh my gosh, how do those tiny little people
carry what they in? They don't have like mules or four wheelers or.
No, they have their bodies and they have these crazy straps that go across their forehead.
Holy shit.
And then they have like, it's like a big, huge set, like backpack almost thing. And they'll carry a couple of coolers on their foreheads. Like, I'm still, when they carried our backpacks out, you would think that they would have strapped on our backpacks. They rigged our backpacks on the straps that they had that they carried on their forehead. So it must just be more comfortable for them.
You didn't have to carry your luggage in and out?
Nope. They were really, I know I was prepared to do that, but
you Western people.
I know they were really,
you had a backpack.
They were really,
they're like, we got it.
Kind. Yeah.
That's really cool.
And I mean,
cause you had to trek up in mud both ways, right?
Yeah. On the way back, it wasn't so bad because it hadn't rained for a couple of days, but on the way there, legit, we were walking in some shin deep mud. It was a beautiful hike, definitely. Yeah. And no matter how fast we were hiking, the Peruvians with our backpacks just smoked us.
They're like, come on, Westerners.
No, seriously. It reminded me of like New Yorkers. You know,
walking down Times Square.
But with, you know, massive loads on their back.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But anyways, so that's basically my report back from Peru. And
well, I'm glad you're back.
Well, I'm glad I'm back too. I mean,
not just for your cooking.
Oh yeah. And my cleaning abilities and my mothering abilities and things.
I'm glad because I missed you.
Thanks,
and,
babe.
And it's you know, I have better conversations with you than little people.
I don't know, they're kind of funny. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Until they're not.
I'm always very grateful to come home. Grateful for all the modern conveniences that we have in my bed in particular. And and hot showers, flush toilets, that type of thing.
You know, it's we went together our first time. And I know we came back different, right? Because mm-hmm. everybody around us was like, what the fuck happened to you? It was pretty cool watching, you know, Kylie come back lighter.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I mean, I'm not going to tell her story, but. You know, if you know anybody struggling, this is a good medicine.
She got everything she wanted and then some.
She sure did.
Yeah. And, yeah. And it was just so, it was interesting because she's so young. And so you kind of think like, you know, well, how's ayahuasca going to work with her? Exactly how she needed to be worked with. And, you know, my two cents, my third party perspective was it was very gentle.
Yeah.
And really just everything she needed. And again, I don't even think she knows. I mean, there were so many loose ends. I like that about ayahuasca. It's like breadcrumb trails, you know?
Yeah.
Like she just leaves a whole bunch of loose ends for you to kind of figure out during your integration. But anyways, thanks everybody for listening. I think the next podcast we're going to do will be in a couple of days. And I'm going to talk a lot about how to strengthen the immune system.
That's
good.
I'm going
to talk about a whole bunch of polyphenols. I'm going to talk about how to work with our immune systems and also with our lymphatic systems during this kind of pandemic and the potential, the potential of everybody, you know, getting this in some way, shape or form, either in a mild sense or in a stronger sense, you know, what we can do for our bodies right now to play the best, at least for me and on our family, you know, the best defense for us is a well-played offense. Yeah. And so I want to talk about all the immunity boosters that have scientific backing. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to suggest things that there haven't been some actual substantial double-blind tests about that you could like get up on the internet and and read.
Yeah. That's cool. That's
and then really some methods that I've designed throughout the years that I know specifically work to help.
Yeah, and I got to test all these things because I've been doing them, and it's
me too. Yeah, and anyway. And hopefully that will help. You know, as we all across the world, kind of hunker down for the unexpected.
We're gonna be okay.
Yeah, I feel that way. I know that. I think we're gonna come out stronger.
Humanity's gonna come out way better.
Yeah, I think so. I think so too.
This is some sort of weird reset we're doing. It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, the one thing that I will sign off and say is that make sure you're eating a lot of fiber.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, eating protein without a fiber source built into it is just a missed opportunity. So, you know, really high fiber, lots of leafy greens. And I'm just going to share this one tip. If you've got children that will not eat leafy greens, put it in a tortilla.
Oh, right.
Wrap it up in a tortilla.
Wrap it.
With whatever sauce that they enjoy. They will eat three of those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I don't know what it is about tortillas. Man, little kids, they just love the tortillas. You could put rice, beans, and just a ton of salad in it. You know, microgreens, you know, whatever.
It's going to taste good tonight, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I went to the store today just to get a few things because I wanted to do samosas. And I wanted to do this like mint chutney that, you know, goes along with it. And then kind of like this other dish that anyways, and it was funny.
Yummy.
Yeah. And some tabbouleh, but I wanted to use orzo, but I go to the store and like, there's a lot of the shelves that are just cleared out and cleaned out. So I go down the pasta aisle and everything's cleaned out, but the section of orzo. And I'm like, okay, well clearly nobody knows how to cook with orzo. Great. You know? So I grab orzo and then for my samosas, I'm making it, I have some brown lentils that I'm going to put in it. So I get down to the bean aisle and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's all gone except for the brown lentils. I'm like, so far, the way in which I cook, I'm going to be just fine.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also Joel and I outed ourselves on, I think the last time we disclosed our last names, which is Christensen. We're both on Facebook. If you want to, you know, friend us on Facebook, my name's Cammie Christensen, Joel Christensen.
Yeah, I'm funny. So,
yeah, I know our meme game is strong.
Strong.
Right now. But we'd love to connect that way. We're also both on Instagram underneath our names as well. So we'd love to connect that way. And
like always, we're always open to questions or, you know, anybody wants to, I believe on the podcast, our email is there. It's just the ayahuascaparentspodcast@gmail.com. So feel free to, you know, email us and we'd be happy to have conversations.
Yeah. But anybody have any questions, please, you know, feel free to reach out.
Yes.
Again, thanks for all the lovely messages.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. I know you really appreciate that too. So
yeah, it's fun.
And may you all be well.
Yes.
And be safe.
Be safe. Take care of each other.
Be loved. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Bye.
Okay, bye.